Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you want to buy a home or refinance your current home, Rocket can. Jeffrey underscore jump tweets in, Otani not only pitches and hits in remarkable fashion, never been done before to this level professionally. Yes, best ever. I'm joined now by David Sampson, CBS Sports HQ MLB analyst, host of the Nothing Personal podcast. And David, you can, you know, play semantic games, right? Like, if I were to say Shohei Ohtani is the greatest baseball player ever, that's laughable. But I could make the argument he's the best baseball player ever based on what he's done this season, saying no one's done that at that kind of level, at as high a level, you know, hit 45 home runs, pitched at a good level as well. And I talked to CC Sabathia earlier this week, who's the first person I heard dub Ohtani the best ever, and he doubled down on that statement. So when you hear somebody say Shohei Ohtani is the best baseball player ever, like CeCe said, what's your reaction?
I think it's a bit of hyperbole because it's been a great year and it's been historic. It's been amazing to watch, actually. But you have to do it for more than a year in order to be considered the best ever, don't you?
Well, that's why I say it's like the semantic trick, right? Because I would agree with you. Yes, in order to be considered the best ever, like in total, yes. But like if we're trying to like capture a moment in time, you know, if we're pressing pause and this is the result we have for the rest of eternity, could you say anyone's played baseball at a higher level than Shohei Ohtani has this season? I guess I'll rephrase it that way.
So then what we're saying is this the best season ever in the history of baseball by a player? And I'm still not willing to say that because I'll go back in time to pitchers who are pitching 300 innings, or I'll go back to home run seasons or other MVP seasons by other players. Barry Bonds had seasons that were just incredible, pre-steroids. So I think that, again, I'm an Ohtani fan. There's no question about it. But I'm just not willing right now to say this is the best I've ever seen. Personally, I won't even say that. I mean, Miguel Cabrera, Giancarlo Stanton in 2017, I watched his MVP season when he hit 59 home runs and what he did for our team. And you're right, he didn't pitch, but in terms of his value to the team, the Angels are watching October baseball just like the Marlins did during Giancarlo's MVP season. So I guess I'm just not willing to say it's the best season ever.
Yeah, well, they say get you a man who could do both, right? Like, Barry Bonds, enhanced Barry Bonds, had probably the greatest seasons I've ever seen, but that does weigh into the whole conversation, too, and how that factored in. But you bring up a point that I think some people here, especially people who aren't as dialed into baseball, and they go, how can this be? And it's been a trend with the Angels in general, right? Because Mike Trout has been considered the best player in the game for a while. Now they have Ohtani on their team, yet they're still not a playoff team. Can you explain to people, you just referenced Stanton's season, how a player can have that much value but still not see it translate to team success? I mean, is it just confirmation that baseball in some ways is an individual sport masquerading as a team sport?
Well, I was going to say that baseball is a complete team sport that masquerades with certain great individual performances, because so many times you have teams where the parts are greater than the sum, and then you don't win games. And that's the case with the Angels. They've got great parts, except they just can't win enough games. They don't have enough pitching. So I guess if I had to sum up what's wrong with the Angels, I'd use one word, and I'd say pitching. You can't go into a season with Ohtani, who is really pitching the innings of a number five starter. Don't forget that. He's not giving you ace innings. If you're going to be an ace of a staff, you have to be around 200 innings, not 130. And when you look at what the Angels have done behind Ohtani in the rotation, you know, it's sleepy, dumpy, and grumpy pitching. And that I remember this. I lived this, Robin. I had great position players, but we just didn't have the pitching, and therefore you just don't win games.
Now, when you're talking about teams that are winning games or competing to win games right now, there's a heck of a race going on for the wild card spot in the American League. Yankees beat the Red Sox last night. Blue Jays drop another one to the... All of a sudden, it's been funny for me covering the Yankees because I guess... I'm not covering the Yankees, but seeing the way that the Yankees are covered, because I feel like they get a little bit more of hysteria around them. You know, Boone's job has been on the line. Cashman's job has been on the line. I'm not saying in reality, but, you know, in the talking head point of view during the course of this season. But I feel like that team's gone through a lot of ebbs and flows, whether it's a winning streak or people saying that they're out of it. Where do you assess the Yankees' current position as it is relative to that wild card chase?
Well, they're a very streaky team, and generally very streaky teams are not going to be successful in October. That's sort of the general rule of law that we would have inside baseball. And the Yankees certainly have the ability, like you saw last night, when Stanton hits that three-run home run, it's sort of a dagger against Eovaldi to make it 6-0. You just know that, okay, they've got that game. Toronto's lost a few in a row, so they keep sort of leapfrogging each other because one of those three teams is not going to make it. I think the Yankees are in danger of not making the playoffs. But they could go on one of those streaks where they just win the rest of their games. That's possible, too. That's what makes the race so interesting here this last week. But in terms of their overall team, it's been disappointing. And I think that Boone and Cashman do have their job on the line because at some point, Steinbrenner has to say to himself, forget the fact that we haven't been to the World Series or won a World Series since 2009, but now I'm looking at sort of the lack of impact we've had in October over the years, recent years, and I think a change is necessary. So if they don't make the playoffs, I would be very surprised if both Boone and Cashman were back.
Now, that's interesting. Yeah, obviously a package deal, I think, in the sense that it feels like, you know, Boone was Cashman's guy. But Cashman is the one who's been there for a long time and has had a lot of success, right? But with the Yankees, there is a certain level of expectations as well. Is your statement based on them not meeting expectations this season, or Cashman has just been there a long time and it's time for a change or a combination of the two?
I think you have to start looking, if you're the Yankees, at the money that's being spent and realize that they've got a top payroll almost every single year and they're just not getting the performance from an organizational standpoint, let's say the way the Dodgers have, who also have a top payroll, and they seem to be consistent now, let's say 9 years in a row making the playoffs. And then getting a World Series in that realm once last year, and they're trying to repeat. So I think that when you're evaluating your team, you have to look at the money that you're spending, you have to look at the performance that you're getting, and then you have to decide whether you think a new voice is going to make a difference, whether that voice is in the front office or whether that voice is in the manager's office.
Robin Lundberg talking to David Sampson, CBS Sports HQ MLB analyst, host of the Nothing Personal podcast. Now, when we're talking about those three teams, let's bring in the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. Obviously, one of those teams is going to be disappointed. And even if you are saying the Yankees are having a disappointing season, I think there's such a variety of outcomes that could take place from this. Would you say for those three teams, would you be shocked if any of them are in the mix for the World Series if they do qualify versus the fact that they're also in the mix to be out of the playoffs completely?
So we had a rule that we said that getting to October requires a lot of skill on your team. Getting through October requires a lot of luck for your team. So it's very difficult when people say, oh, the hottest team is going to win the World Series. Maybe the hottest team is the best team going into October, but you still need a lot of breaks during the different rounds of the playoffs just to get through those rounds and win those games. So I think it's impossible to predict, and I don't think that there is a great way to correlate between just sneaking into the playoffs and then doing well in the playoffs. So that's what makes October baseball the best, and I think that's what makes baseball postseason the best postseason, because you just don't know what's going to happen over that entire huge month of October. But if the Yankees get in and they get on one of those streaks in the playoffs, they could win the 12 games, right? No problem. The Blue Jays have a lineup that I think is the best lineup in baseball. They've lost three in a row now, but the Blue Jays, if Ryu comes back and somehow gets himself back together again, they've got a rotation and they've got a pitching staff that could do it. The Red Sox, to me, they've done it a little bit with smoke and mirrors this year. I didn't expect them to be as good as they've been, but they could get through October too. You just don't know.
Now, when you're looking at the teams that have more solidified positioning, I mean, part of the point that I think you were emphasizing that I've made in the past. You know, it's funny because you could throw it out with other sports and maybe you'd say, I might take this team over the field. You can't do that in baseball. But is there a team, a couple of teams that you think are a cut above the rest heading into October?
I think the National League is fascinating because I no longer am willing to say that the Giants are faking it this year. I keep waiting for them to fade, and it's over. There's no more fading. They've done it. They've made it through the regular season. They've got 100 wins right now. They're getting career years from so many different players, and that's what makes – that's the dream of an executive, right? When you're putting your team together in the offseason during spring training, you sort of dream of players having career years all at once, and that's what's happening in San Francisco. The Dodgers are deep, and they know what it takes to win. And then you look at the Brewers, who probably have the best rotation, the best pitching, and if Yelich can somehow get some power back and get his average up and have a good run in October – they've got a lineup that can win. So you just, and by the way, how about the Braves in their infield? And the Braves may not even make the playoffs if Philadelphia catches them, which I don't know. I don't think they will, but they could. So who knows what's going to happen? But there's so many good teams in the National League, it makes it interesting.
One more for you. I saw that they might be experimenting with a ball that has extra grip on it, if you will, as part of a response to the controversy that happened this year with pitchers putting stuff on the ball. Do you think that story has completely faded away as far as relevancy to the outcome of this season? Did baseball, in a sense, do a good job sort of eliminating that? Because that was the story of the season, other than Ohtani, earlier in the year, the sticky stuff problem, but haven't heard much about it in recent weeks as we've reached the playoff chase. Maybe it's just a function of the playoffs coming up.
I think they've just gotten quiet, but the reality is there's got to be sticky stuff on a baseball. We all want it as executives. The pitchers want it as well, and so do the hitters. With all the pitchers pitching 98 miles an hour now, you want those pitchers to have a good grip on the ball because you want them to have command. You don't want to get up there as a hitter and be scared that you're going to get hit. And I mean hit, not purposefully. So they're going to develop a foreign substance that is universal. I'm calling it like a universal foreign substance, right? So that is something that all balls will have, all balls will be prepared with, and it will be tested not just in AAA, but they need to show it to big league pitchers and have big league pitchers hold the ball, grip the ball, throw bullpens with the ball, feel that ball, and see whether or not that would be accepted by the union as the only accepted foreign substance. But I think the next collective bargaining agreement, when it is done, will have provisions in it about the baseball and about the foreign substances that will be allowed and those that will not be. Because the blanket rule that you can have no foreign substance, that is going to go away by next season.
David, really appreciate your time and insight. And enjoy your weekend, man.
Hey, take care. Thank you.
David Sampson, CBS Sports HQ MLB analyst, host of the Nothing Personal podcast. The phrasing foreign substance, and I use it too, but it's just amusing to me because I can't help but think of professional wrestling. Oh, he's got a foreign substance. What is this? You know, like I don't know if this manager would fly in today's day and age, but there used to be a manager named Mr. Fuji who would throw. Was it salt or dust or something he would throw in people's eyes? And that's what I think of as a foreign substance. You know, like, oh, what has he got? He's got a foreign substance. Not like Vaseline or whatever it is that pitchers are using, this gunk that they created. You know, I did some research into cheating in baseball for a project I'm working on, and it's been around the whole time, whether it's, you know, pitchers with sticky stuff, batters with cork, steroids, sign stealing. They were stealing signs in like the late 1800s, early 1900s, you know, with telescopes. And there was even a buzzer system that one team used, the Phillies used in the early 1900s, where they had like a telescope at center field to steal the sign and then a buzzer system wired to their third base coach that would send a shock up his leg to indicate what the pitch was going to be. So I think with, you know, there's that line of trying to get a better grip and trying to be able to pitch a ball that's just impossible to hit. And that was the problem that baseball ran into this year. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. The NBA season is approaching. A lot of talk about who the best player in the NBA is, all these lists that came out this week. But there is a story that's emerged from the NBA that I think will be a pretty big talking point. And it has to do with something that may keep a player off the court, not what he is doing on the court. I'll explain what I'm talking about coming up next. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. You can weigh in at Robin Lundberg on Twitter. That's RobinLundberg. And like I said, also at 855-212-4227.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. You know, I have a tough time watching the news, like the real news, because everything is COVID all the time. And I think here's where I am in general, right? Obviously, COVID is serious. Like, obviously, way too many people have died. Our entire way of life has been altered. At the same time, I think because it is their main topic and because, you know, they want to keep their audience, a lot of media outlets have just, like, generated fear in the way that they cover it. They prey on people's fears. And it's not that some of the information is factually incorrect. It's just the presentation of it. And there was a local newscast on in my house yesterday, and I swear I heard the word vaccine 750 times in 2 minutes. And just to, you know, because I like to be honest with the audience, here's where I stand on the vaccine thing. I mean, I'm fully vaccinated. I would recommend you be fully vaccinated. I think the more people that are fully vaccinated, the better. Yes, it doesn't prevent you completely from testing positive for COVID, but it lessens the chances that you test positive for COVID, and it lessens the chances that if you do get COVID, that you have serious side effects of COVID, and you know, it's probability. I feel like some people don't understand basic probability. I don't think anybody should be forced to do anything, but it's also the right of employers and the like and anybody else to make their policies as well, right? But I've just sort of gotten a little tired of the debate because I feel like people are too polarized. And, you know, at this point where, you know, what other information needs to be presented? The information is out there. People are going to do or not do what they want. Businesses, cities, whatever are going to do, certain groups are going to do or not do what they want. But when it comes to the sports world, you know, it's a topic, obviously, when it's going to impact someone being on the field or not. And in this case, the court in the NBA. And, you know, the NFL, the way they handled it was basically they made it as tough as possible to function normally within their league unvaccinated. So they didn't put out a vaccine mandate, but it's certainly been more difficult for non-vaccinated players. The NBA also doesn't have a mandate for the players, but I feel like Adam Silver and company are leaving that to the state's hands, and it's going to force the issue in specific places especially, but in general across the league. I mean, I believe it's something like 90% of NBA players are vaccinated. One player who's not is Andrew Wiggins of the Warriors. And the problem that Wiggins is facing here is, as of now, he will not be able to play in home games. That's right, home games. All of them. 41 of them. He applied for a religious exemption to getting the COVID-19 vaccine, which was denied. I don't know if that's because the NBA found that his reasoning for it was flimsy, or just because the San Francisco Department of Public Health has made clear that there would be no exemptions for anyone 12 or older at large indoor gatherings, which is what a professional basketball game is, a large indoor gathering. So this is not an NBA policy. This is not the NBA that is saying Andrew Wiggins cannot play at home games. This is because of the rules that are in place where the Warriors are located. Now, obviously, that's, I mean, a massive deal. I mean, think about the money that could be on the line for Wiggins in that case. And then, you know, the impact on the team. You're talking about, you know, you got Steph, you got Clay, you got Draymond. Beyond that, he's as important as anybody to that team, right? At this point in time. That's a significant blow. And it's not the only time that story is going to come up. You also have similar policies in New York. You know, and the Knicks have come out and said that their team is 100% vaccinated. Sean Marks, who is the GM for the Nets, said that their team is not 100% vaccinated, that there are a couple of players, if practice was held the day he made the statement, wouldn't be able to participate, but he said he was confident that they'd all be vaccinated. Or he didn't say that specifically. Let me not put words in his mouth. He was confident that it wouldn't be an issue for them when the season actually started, which has led to speculation about who on that team may not be vaccinated and the like. I don't think Marks would say that if he didn't already have the conversation with the players, but we'll see. We'll see how that develops. Wiggins, I'm comfortable using his name more so than with other players because he's on the record saying he wouldn't get the vaccine unless he was forced to, and the NBA included his name in the statement. So we know for a fact his vaccination status, and we know for a fact the problem it may cause for his team. So that's a tricky situation because my question to you is, if you're the Warriors, how do you handle this? I mean, like, if you're Andrew Wiggins, how do you handle it? The easiest way to handle it is to get vaccinated, right? We now have, I don't know, 2.5 billion people in the world who have received this vaccine. The returns are in, fully approved by the FDA, all these things. Like, what else do you want? But if for whatever reason that is something he does not want to do, and again, I don't think anybody should be forced to do anything, he's essentially being forced, or he's going to have to cost his team greatly, cost himself greatly. I mean, I don't know what choice he has. What, are they going to trade him to a team that doesn't play in a place where these policies are in place? And there's nobody to get, you know, like, it's funny because there's no, it's not funny, but it's interesting because there's no, you know, like, in the realm of the sports aspect of it, you can't get mad at the NBA. I mean, the NBA has no control over this. So it's not even the NBA making him do it. I think the NBA is actually being smart in a sense here. They're allowing the dirty work to be done for them. And when you're a part of a team like that, I don't think you want to be the guy who, you know, is costing the team because you can't play in a home game. I mean, that's not even just you miss a week or 10 days or whatever it is, and when you could have returned quicker if you were vaccinated. I mean, you see that in the NFL, right? Like, I think it's like 2 negative tests within, you know, 48-hour span or something like that, even if you're vaccinated and you had come up positive. So you could return much more quickly versus if you're unvaccinated, you have to be out for a certain amount of time. We're not even talking about being away from the team or being out. You're talking about not being able to play in half of the games. So I don't know if Wiggins really, and his conviction and his stance is going to be very much tested because I don't know if he has much of a choice here. So if you're the team, do you just sit back and let it take care of itself? I mean, how do you handle a situation like that? 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. At Robin Lundberg on Twitter. That's R-O-B-I-N-L-U-N-D-B-E-R-G. Again, like I said, the NBA denied his request for religious exemption, but I don't know if that's because they didn't believe it, didn't buy it, or it's because, like I said, the San Francisco Department of Public Health said there would be no exemptions for anyone 12 and older at large indoor gatherings. So again, they may not have a choice. And the statement says, under the current order, if unvaccinated, they cannot enter indoor arenas regardless of the reason they are unvaccinated and cannot test out of this requirement even if they have a medical or religious exemption. So there it is in the explanation. the NBA says, sorry, dude, not our choice, but you can't play in home games. And this right now, I believe, I don't know if it goes beyond New York and San Francisco, but right now this would impact obviously the Golden State Warriors, the New York Knicks, and the Brooklyn Nets.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Joshua Avery tweets in, trade Andrew Wiggins in a second rounder for Ben Simmons. Then they can both play this year. Common sense. Oh, yeah, I was just asking what you do if you're the Warriors around this Wiggins situation. I mean, maybe you do nothing. The pressure is now firmly on Andrew Wiggins after the NBA denied his religious exemption request. Essentially, they had no choice but to not deny that either because of the rules in San Francisco. And as of right now, Wiggins will not be able to play in home games unless he gets vaccinated, which is a story for teams in New York and San Francisco. The Knicks have said their team is fully vaccinated. The Nets have said if practice was held last week, there would be a couple people that might not be able to participate, but they don't foresee it being a problem when the season begins. The Warriors, Wiggins specifically, is named out there. And I don't know. You know, the NBA's sort of letting the states take care of it and the cities take care of it. And you'll see, the results here. So I wonder just how steadfast Wiggins is in his position. I mean, I get him at the point where, you know, I don't even know what to say in an argument anymore. I feel like the information is out there. But it's interesting. So is the Ben Simmons situation in Philadelphia. Because Ben Simmons, like, he ain't James Harden, right? It's a difference between when James Harden trying to force a trade and Ben Simmons trying to force a trade. I mean, James Harden, whatever you think of him, he'd been on the Rockets. You know, that time period that James Harden was on the Rockets, they were the only team that didn't miss the playoffs in the entire NBA. When Harden got traded to Oklahoma City to Houston, they made the playoffs his first year there, and they made the playoffs every single year he was there. The only team in the league to make the playoffs every year during that span. Yes, they didn't win a championship, but Harden's performance, obviously what seemed to happen, the collapse of the situation around him. I don't think anybody liked the way Harden forced himself out of there, myself included. But he's a different level of player, and I think big picture you could understand why he might have wanted to move on, regardless of the smaller picture of how he moved on. Ben Simmons is a little different for a couple reasons. One, he's not that level of player. Two, I don't know if the critiques of Ben Simmons' performance are out of line. You know? I mean, look at what happened. Look at what happened in the season, in the playoffs. Dude had a dunk attempt. Didn't take it. Never attempts an outside shot. Really doesn't have a shot at all. Doesn't mean he's a bum. You know, he has value in the sense that he's a versatile defender. He can still do things with the basketball in his hands. I think maybe it is time for a new circumstance, new situation for him, and that will help out. I kind of think he needs to play up, too, meaning power forward and center. I mean, I could see Ben Simmons as a center for a team rather than a point guard. But he's a self-check. So, it's officially a failure in Philadelphia at this point for him. And in the meantime, you're looking at an awkward situation. An awkward situation for Ben Simmons in Philly. And Doc Rivers is going on a press tour right now. Because that's the other thing about this that situation with him is the people that have spoken out. You know, it's Joel Embiid who said he basically the game after that the right after the game where he didn't dunk the ball, he basically implied that he had a problem with Ben Simmons in that situation. And Doc Rivers said was asked, I think, if he could win a championship with him, and said, I don't know, something along those lines, which he's since tried to clean up. So you get where Simmons would feel betrayed a little bit, because he's like, yo, you're supposed to have my back. I mean, you're the coach. You're the other star teammate. You're supposed to have my back. But when you, perform the way Ben Simmons has performed, it's not like the criticism is out of line. Here was part of what Doc Rivers had to say in his press tour when he was on First Take.
It was a good conversation, and he gave his reasons, which we obviously didn't agree with. But, you know, Stephen, I think in sports, and you've been around it a lot, there's been so many times that this has happened that hasn't been reported, and the guy comes back. So, listen, we're going to go through it. We're going to always do what's best for the team. But I can tell you up front, we would love to get Ben back. And if we can, we're going to try to do that. You know, Ben has a long contract. So it's in our hands, and we want him back.
And, you know, what are the expectations then, Doc, about the Ben Simmons situation?
To get him back. And once we get back in the fold, then we can get to work. If that doesn't happen, I don't have an expectation because I don't know where we would go. That is to be, you know, that'll happen if it happens. But right now, Ben is still part of this team, and I'm going to focus on that part of it.
Look, Doc is trying to clean it up, but he is part of why this is a mess, too. I mean, he could say his comment after the playoff game was taken out of context or whatever, but still, if you heard that question and answer live, I mean, you can understand why some would say that he threw Ben Simmons under the bus.
Yeah, I want to correct that because I would love you guys to play what I said. Mm-hmm. Because I've told you this before, Stephen A., never said what was reported. The question was asked about Ben. It was the first question after we just lost a game 7. My answer was, I'm not answering any of that stuff right now, guys. I don't even know how to answer that. That had nothing to do with about Ben. I was basically saying, I'm not answering that crap, those questions. You know, I've been in sports a long time, and I'm not misrepresented very often, but in that case, I was. But it is what it is. Ben knows, Rich knows, and I know.
Though, I mean, if he says something like that, what we can do is play for you what he actually said, and you can make a judgment for yourself. Here was Doc Rivers from, what was the date on that, Anthony?
That would be on June the 20th.
June 20th, all the way back in June 20th. Here was Doc.
Doc, do you think Ben Simmons can still be a point guard for a championship team like the one you guys want to become?
Yeah, David, I don't know that question or the answer to that right now. So I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, sorry, Doc. I get what he was saying in the cleanup, but I also, you know, you hear that. It didn't sound like he was dismissive of the question there. Didn't sound like that was like, how could you dare ask me that question? It sounded like, yeah, I don't really believe in Ben Simmons. That's what it sounded like to me. And for good reason, by the way, for good reason. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Doc feeling that way. I think almost everybody watching felt that way. And I used to be a big believer in Ben Simmons. I thought he had the talent. You know, and I was even Team Simmons in the Team Simmons Embiid debates. Because, look, Joel Embiid plays a style and a position that's not quite as conducive to the modern NBA. But neither is being a complete self-check on the perimeter. And I've switched in that regard. I mean, like, it was also injury that factored in. But I thought there'd be some development from Ben Simmons. There's been no development. I mean, it's not even that he can't shoot the ball from the outside. He can't score at all. He's got no pet move. He's got no little baby hook. He's not a great finisher around the rim even. I mean, it's a problem. It's a problem. It's why, like, when, even these fake trades get floated out there. There's a fake trades of like Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons. I wouldn't trade Kyrie Irving for Ben Simmons. I get like the idea that it's a more of a need or more of a fit for the Nets to get a defensive player like Ben Simmons in, but I don't care. Like, Kyrie is a vastly superior basketball player. Vastly. So I that's just not the kind of deal I would make. I mean, you even had the Warriors. I think it was Joe Lacob who had come out and said, you know, he commented publicly on Ben Simmons because there had been some rumors that the Warriors might be interested. And the Warriors owner had basically said Ben Simmons makes a lot of money and I don't even know if he could play at the end of games. And that's right, too. Like, you're not a superstar if you can't close a game. If you have to be sat down because you're a liability for your team, you're not a superstar. I mean, even calling you a star is very generous if that's the case. So, the Ben Simmons situation, it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. I think it's got to be past the point of no return. I mean, Ben Simmons seems to be personally upset and hurt, which I do understand. I do understand when you're a superstar teammate and your coach, you feel, instead of having your back, are calling you out. But at the same time, it's not like the critiques of Ben Simmons are unfounded. You know, the word narrative gets used a lot nowadays. This ain't a narrative. It's the truth. The guy's hurt his team in his lack of development and his inability to be a threat out on the court. And when you're, you know, demanding a trade, it takes a certain level of gravitas to demand a trade. And he ain't James Harden. As much as people might not have liked what James Harden did. There's, as a great philosopher once said, there's levels to this. Speaking of which, like all the NBA player ranking lists came out this week, ESPN, Sports Illustrated. It's funny some of the stuff that people make a big deal of. As far as like ranking the top player in the NBA right now, I think it's a three-man race. I think at this moment you got to pick between Giannis, fresh off the NBA championship, Kevin Durant, who was unbelievable in that series against the Bucks and led Team USA to the gold, and LeBron James, who's had that title for the longest time, but now 37 years old, or he will be at some point this season. I think he's 36 right now, and heading into his 19th season, which is wild. Steph Curry, probably right in that mix right after. I mean, like, if I'm trying to tier it out, I would say it's those three guys, Curry, Harden, Jokic, Doncic. Kawhi would be in that mix, too, if he was healthy. But that's my grouping. Before you even go, then you're looking at Embiid. Who am I missing? Dame. You know, guys of that ilk, right after that initial grouping of players. But, you know, I think the arguments actually come a little lower on the list. Like, I brought up Kyrie before. Kyrie was 19 at SI, 20 at ESPN. And I get dropping Kyrie because of reliability. Like, I certainly get that. And he should be dropped some because, you know, reliability, leadership questions. But 19 or 20, that's, like, harsh. There aren't 18, 19 better basketball players in the world than Kyrie Irving, who is the most skilled player who has ever lived. I mean, you think about it. Like, ability to handle the basketball, ability to finish, footwork, shooting, that combination of skill, no one's ever been more blessed than Kyrie Irving in that regard. you know, where Russell Westbrook might be ranked could lead to some controversy because, you know, he averages triple-double. Now he's on the Lakers, but he's been traded by a few teams. NBA season is approaching, which means those sort of discussions will be plentiful. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227, at Robin Lundberg on Twitter. That's R-O-B-I-N-L-U-N-D-B-E-R-G. We'll get back to the NFL at the top of the hour, including my picks, where I have to redeem myself from a disaster that was last week, like a total disaster. I will do my best to get ready for that right now. If you want to be ready to participate in the show, again, 855-212-4227. But we're talking NFL coming up next. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.